Now let us go to the third verse, which is not the vision of Brahma and not even the vision of the Brahmin's wives, but it is the vision of the cowherd damsels of Braja, the gopis, from the 21st chapter of the 10th canto. The song of the flute, the Venu Gita. Because the gopis, they would see every day, they would see that Krishna and the cowherd boys would go out with the cows. This is in the 21st chapter, and Krishna begins herding the cows in the 15th chapter. It's described on the day known as Gopastami, which is one of the days, the Astami of the dark of the Sukla Paksha, I believe. Yes, the Sukla Paksha, the time of the month of Kartik when the moon is waxing, it's growing. And on that Astami, on the eighth day of that, Krishna enters the Vrindavan forest with the cows for the first time. So that takes place in the 15th chapter, and this is the 21st chapter of the 10th canto. So, at that time, the cows, because Krishna is taking them, they're feeling the greatest ecstasy because they're getting their time with Krishna. And the cowherd boys, because the time they spend with the cows is longer than the time they spend with the calves. That means the time they spend with Krishna is even longer. So their ecstasy is very great in the morning. But what happens to the calves? The calves who Krishna was taking out, are they left behind? Is it possible for them to even tolerate that when Krishna is old enough to take the cows? No. They forcibly go with Krishna. So the cowherd boys are ecstatic. Their time with Krishna is now. They're with Krishna all day long. Aham Purvam. Who will touch Krishna first? They're going out, and meanwhile, while they're in ecstasy, and the calves are in ecstasy, and the cows are in ecstasy, the mothers and fathers of Krishna, all the senior or elderly members of the cowherd community, they are feeling the deepest misery because the time when Krishna is leaving for the forest is approaching. They cannot tolerate this. And the young gopis, they cannot tolerate it. It is impossible for them to tolerate because their love is so intense. But yet they are forced to tolerate it. So where is their consolation? Their love for Krishna is of the highest purity. Srila Narottama Das Thakur again, he compares this, the purity of prema bhakti, to gold. We heard about gold, and it's effulgent, golden effulgence when it is molten. Because why is gold melted? Because this is how the impurities are taken out of the gold. So it is melted and the impurities come to the top and they are removed. And then the gold is much purer than it was in the beginning. But when this process is completed, says Narottama Das Thakur, 100 times, hundreds of times practically speaking, hundreds of births, where we want to be devotees, but also we want this, labha, puja, pratishtari, yata, upasaka, gan. We have so many weeds, gross, subtle, other desires in the heart. And the more One desires to love Krishna, to actually be a devotee, to actually be a servant. Once one disciple of Prabhupada wrote Prabhupada a letter, and in it he enclosed a poem. And at the end of every stanza of this poem, it was a prayer to Krishna, and he said, "Oh Krishna, let me become your devotee." At the end of every stanza, very sincerely he said this. And Prabhupada's response was said, "Your poem is very, very nice, but one thing, instead of saying, 'Oh Krishna, let me become your devotee,' you should say, 'Oh Krishna, let me become your servant.'" Because this is at the essence of the problem, and this is at the essence of the solution. We have to become servants. Servants of the servant. And again, as we were speaking of before, any mentality that will sneak in of being, of enjoying spirit, will keep us from actually being servants and actually from entering into this wonderful land, actually entering deeply into this land which we're almost sitting on. We're just one layer. So therefore, Prabhupada said, remove devotee. I am a devotee. Replace, I am a servant. Please let me become your servant. So when that desire to love Krishna, to actually be a servant of Krishna is in the heart, Durdaivam Idrisamihan Anujanarag, and then you realize this, at the same time as that is there, this other desire is there, not this desire, but so many other desires are there, and so much dullness is there in the heart, and I'm so unfortunate that Krishna is so kind and he's made so many himself available in the form of his holy name, but I have no attraction for it. Then one begins to attain the prerequisite for being a servant, and that's humility. It is the hardest thing in the world to become a servant. It's easier to become a rocket scientist, the greatest of all, of anything in this world, than to become a humble servant, because being a servant is exactly opposite to the atmosphere in the material world. It's exactly the opposite. Everything, the mood, the ambience, the advertising is pushing us in exactly the opposite direction to pull us down into the enjoying spirit. All the propaganda is there, and we have that very tendency by the very nature of our being in the material world. Because of the false ego's tendency is Ishwaraham, Ahambhogi, Siddham, Balavansuki. So therefore, these two spirits are completely antagonistic to each other. And they cause the greatest pain due to sincerity. They cause the greatest pain. And then I realize that I feel no pain at all. So what does that speak about my sincerity? Another cause to lament. So all this process of attaining the stage of humility, whereas where one can actually call to Krishna, chant properly, Kirtaniya Sadahari, as Prabhupada, we heard what Prabhupada said, how to chant, calling out to Srimati Radharani and Krishna, and how Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, praying to Srila Rupa Goswami, praying to the holy name, to give one the qualification to serve, not to enjoy the holy name, but to serve the holy name with body, mind, soul, intelligence, everything. And how Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you should think that when you are touching your beads, you are touching the lotus feet of... What name did he use? Does anyone remember? Huh? What name did he use? Sri Gosunda. touching his lotus feet. And then how do I chant? So the process of gaining humility is the process of bringing the impurities to the surface of the gold. Becoming painfully aware of the discrepancy between what I am and what I want to be. What I have and what I wish to have. And Krishna will test us 1,000 times. Well, what do you really want? What do you really want? So therefore, after Dudaiva Nidhi Samihana Anujano Raga, then there is Trinada Pisini Chena. And then, Nadanam Najanam, I don't want the Dhanam, the Janam, the Sundarim, Kavitam Va. I don't want these things, but not superficially, sincerely, fully from the depths of my heart. When people say, oh, nice class, I have to check what my consciousness actually is and say, no, no, no. No, I know what's in my heart. You might not say no, 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 because it's not practical, but one has to think, know the depths of one's consciousness and understand how dependent one is on mercy. So this is the process. This is the process of purifying the gold. So Narottama Das Thakur says the heart of prema bhakti is like prema, it's like gold purified in 100 flames. 100 times this has to, 100 bursts it has to be brought to the surface. One has to feel terrible about one's qualification. And we read that this is how the great devotees feel, and then yet, but not what I call self-indulgently, neurotically, always thinking about how bad I am, but quickly turning to Krishna and praying fully and deeply for mercy. This is the process of purifying the heart, calling out the holy names in this mood. Kirtaniya sadhari, therefore trinada pisani chena. Is the qualification for kirtaniya sadhari, for sincerely calling out to Krishna like a baby crying for mother, Prabhupada said. And the mother, Mother Hari, Srimati Radharani, she cannot keep away from a devotee who is chanting like that, who is praying like that, who is that sincere, like a baby crying for mother. The mother may be doing something else and will give the child the dummy. That's what they call it in Australia. What? Pacifier. Yes, that's it. But it's a better name for it is a dummy. Because if you accept anything other than your mother, what you want, you're a dummy. And what do we accept other than what we want? Petty material desires. Prabhupada once said, they will trade Krishna for the beautiful face of a woman, or vice versa. So, again and again, yes, I'm not sincere. Brought to the surface until the gold and that impurity scraped off. And then a deeper level is revealed, more subtle, more closer to the real fact. Of the enmity and envy of Krishna, the aversion to Krishna, being aversion to being a servant of Krishna. There was one in Dante's Inferno. He wrote one thing: better to suffer in hell than serve in heaven. This is our position. He actually nailed, actually exactly described the condition of a conditioned soul suffering under false ego. He exactly described it. There is such a deep enmity with Krishna, and it has to be love has to enter in. That's the cause of the hardness of the heart, of the selfishness. And this is the disqualification for being in Vrindavan. So 100 times, the gold of our heart has to be purified. And the impurities have to be rejected. Not accepted as the real thing. They have to be rejected again and again. That choice has to be made because Maya will offer again and again. What is it that you really want? What do you want? What do I want? And until we only want Krishna, until we're that trustworthy, we cannot be in Vrindavan. And yet again, we cannot see Krishna, the beauty of Krishna's form. And yet again, even after being so the greatest devotee, like Lord Brahma, still Krishna reveals something, but not everything. And the wives of the Brahmins, he reveals still more of his beauty. He's twirling their hearts. He didn't twirl Lord Brahma's heart. Brahma was like this, you know. He was terrified, actually. But the wives of the Brahmins. And his whole own heart was, as Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains. But here in this verse, the gopis were so distraught because Krishna was going out. Their only solace, the only consolation, the only satisfaction they could feel in the heart was to associate with Krishna by talking about him with the other gopis. And in that mood of missing Krishna, not being with Krishna, talking about him, this is actually the mood or the process taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book. And it is also the method, by talking about Krishna, is the method of developing some taste, something, some dust, some coloring of the consciousness, which is the theme of this presentation, and this is the theme of the Krishna consciousness movement, what to speak of this retreat, that we want to color our consciousness with Krishna consciousness. And however much we can color, dye, D-Y-E, our consciousness in Krishna thought, in Krishna action, in Krishna work, or Krishna consciousness, to that degree we are fortunate. Because the results of that are eternal, and the results of all other dying are death. D-I-E-I-N-G. That kind of dying. And being stuck within dukkhalayama shashvatam anitya sukaloka, this world where it's so clear that we're all longing for something eternal, and how disappointing this world is, because everything is temporary. Even the good things are temporary. We finally gained something that we love, that we like, and it's temporary. It vanishes. It's crushed into dust. Fine powder by the forces of time. Kalosmin lokachaya krit. And it's inevitable. But the gopis, on the other hand, their consciousness was completely dyed. They were ragatmika. Their whole self was nothing but this. This is what they were. They were love for Krishna, practically speaking. They are, in the language of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar Devotion, they are Shraya Tattva. They are the abode of love. This is what they are, Ragatmika. So therefore, when Krishna was away from them, the cowherd boys were ecstatic, the cows were ecstatic, the calves that could accompany them were ecstatic, and the elderly cowherd men and cowherd ladies and the gopis, they were broken in heart, continuously and only. And Mother Yasoda, she practically wouldn't let Krishna go in the mornings. Krishna would be leaving, and with the cowherd boys trying to pull him away, and Mother Yasoda would say, "Krishna, will you have enough to eat? Are you going to be all right? You have such soft, tender lotus feet. Will you be all right? Balaram, take care of him. Don't leave his side. Sridham, you stay on this side. Sudham, you stay on this side. Surround him. There's always so much trouble within the forest. This demon comes. You stay with him." "Yes, Mother Yasoda." I mean, while they're trying to pull Krishna away. And she says, Krishna says, "I'll be all right, Mother. Don't worry. I'll stay with Balaram." She says, "Okay." They walk a little. Mother Yasoda comes running out, stops them again. "Please, you promise, Balaram? You promise you'll stay with... Here's some more food." She tells him, "Remember this mantra for protection?" And then he walks out further. "I'll be all right, Mother." And the cowherd boys, if they had watches, they would be looking at their watches. "Oh, it's getting late, Krishna." But Krishna, being the perfect son, and Mother Yasoda's heart is being pulled at every step. And Krishna doesn't play his flute until he actually enters the Vrindavan forest. So when the sound of the flute enters the ears of those Brijbasis who are staying behind, they know Krishna is now entering the Vrindavan forest. And their minds are completely absorbed in the scene of what's going on. So what's happening here in this verse, when the gopis are talking to each other, they're talking, they hear the sound of the flute, and they're glorifying that flute, and they know that now Krishna is just entering the forest of Vrindavan. And Krishna actually is manifesting this scene, this verse, in their hearts as they are speaking it. So this is what the gopis are seeing. This is the fifth verse from the 21st chapter. Baha pidam natavara vapu kanayo kanikaram. Pida natavara vapu kanayo kanikaram. Baha pidam natavara vapu kanayo kanikaram. Ba, a peacock feather. Apidam, same. Krishna, in every vision, he always has a peacock feather on his head. How that? What does that mean? That means how much Krishna loves these devotee peacocks. He always dresses with a peacock feather. So how much he's reciprocating with them. They're offering, they're dancing for his pleasure. We hear in the 15th chapter of the 10th canto, the ecstasy that goes on when Krishna enters the forest of Vrindavan. And the peacocks are dancing, mayona nrityam, and everyone is all the other animals. Krishna is playing his flute. The peacocks are dancing in the valleys, and all the animals are watching and stunned by the sound of the flute and the beauty of the dancing. And the peacocks are dancing in the rainy season. We see it here in Vrindavan. That means in July, August, the peacocks begin to dance. And they spread their feathers and the males, they're honking. And right after that, they start dropping their feathers. And they dance. And you can see them in those seasons in July. You can see them dancing on Govardhan Hill all around. And they, before they start to dance, they honk really loudly in a low voice, something like the Mayapur rickshaws, unfortunately. That's the only sound that's comparable. They have those horns. It's not a very... of course, it's Mayapur. Okay. But that's just what they sound like. And that's to let you know they're about to begin their dance, especially if you're a female peacock. I'm about to dance. So they spread their feathers and they begin to dance around and around. And they're shaking their feathers and making a wonderful, wonderful sound. Like it's like a rustling sound. The only thing like it is like that when there's a gentle breeze and the leaves of a peepal tree are brushing against each other. It sounds something like that. And they're dancing. And Krishna's playing his flute and they're dancing in such a wonderful way. And at the same time, they're dropping their feathers in appreciation for Krishna's playing his flute, and Krishna takes that feather and places upon his head to show them that he's honoring their gift. So Krishna's wearing the peacock feather, Abhidham, as the decoration on his head. And as we heard in the other verse, he sometimes will put it in the topknot. His hair is tied up in a very wonderful way, not always down, depending upon who he's with and what he's doing. And he'll put it sometimes in a crown, sometimes in a jauntily to the side. And Natabaro, the best of the dancers. Bahipadam Natavara Vapu Kanaya Kanikaram. So what does Kanaya Kanikaram mean? He's taking the Kanikara flower, it's described here as a blue lotus, but we know them as these yellow flowers that come out of the, like a trumpet, yes. And Krishna places it sometimes in one ear, sometimes in another ear. Just like today, if someone wants to be really cool, a teenager, they take one earring and put it on like that. So Krishna, to show his as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will describe, show the beauty of his youth. 16, the fully Navayovanam, blossomed youth, the height of youthful exuberance. He moves the flower around from one ear to the next. The best of dances. He has the Kanikara flower upon his ear, and his garments are effulgent like gold. Kapisham, yellow as gold, and he's wearing Vaijayantam Chamalyam, a garland of Vaijayanti garland of flowers, which means it goes down to his knees. It's very, very, very long, and it's composed of five different kinds of flowers. Randram, Vainor, Adara Sudhya Purayan Gopavinda, or Adara Sudhyan. So Krishna, this is not described in either of the other descriptions of Krishna's beauty. He's filling up the flute with the nectar, the Adha Amrita, the nectar from his lips. He's filling up the flute, and that sound is coming back to the town of Vrindavan and taking the hearts of all the residents of Vrindavan. Taking their hearts, taking their minds. They cannot practically speaking, think of or talk about anything else. This is the love of the gopis of Vrindavan. It is like gold purified in 1,000 flames, 100,000 flames. It is so rarefied. And there is nothing in it other than pleasing Krishna. So this is the scene that they're seeing. that Krishna is entering the forest, the Vrindavan forest, with the cowherd boys, dressed in this way, like a dramatic artist, like a dancer, and playing his flute, his Venu. The Venu is a short flute. And when Krishna goes to the forest, he has different servants carrying different flutes with him. Perhaps he has 100 flutes with him that he uses for different types of music at different times. So the expert servant knows just what flute will make the right sound that Krishna wants at that particular time. So he brings that set of flutes, and Krishna then picks that flute. How difficult it is to be a servant. How difficult, how one must know what pleases Krishna so exactly. He knows what flute to bring at a particular time. What is Krishna's mood? How pure, how connected one has to be. How one has to know what will give Krishna pleasure. So this is the training. The service to the Guru. All the vidhis. Hearing the instructions. Hearing Bhagavatam. Hearing Bhagavad Gita. We're being trained to know what will please Krishna. The patram pushpam palam toyam. Patram means leaf, but especially tulsi leaf. We have to learn what is pleasing to Krishna. And that, when that becomes our pleasure, when our pleasure becomes offering Krishna what pleases Him, then we are becoming servants. I heard Prabhupada once say something that was so heavy about, he was saying, speaking about some devotees, he said, they want to serve me the way they want, and I want them to serve me the way I want. How many layers of impurities of the gold of our heart have to be removed before we are ready to do that? To serve Srila Prabhupada, to serve Sri Guru, Sri Gauranga, Nityananda Prabhu, the way they want. And our pleasure is giving them pleasure. No selfishness, no swartha, no self-interest. This is bhakti. This is devotional service. And then, when I think of me and my attempts, how much do I need mercy? How much do I have to sincerely chant? What to be even to call myself a devotee? So therefore, Prabhupada. Devotee means one who has devotion. Bhakti means one who has bhakti. So how much do I have to understand my condition before I can get the humility to pray sincerely for the mercy that will place me where I wish to be? At least the part of me that sincere wishes to be. How many years have you been a devotee, Prabhu?
Oh, 20 years. I've been 35 years now.
If I think about it, instead of just talk superficially as I usually do, oh, how many lifetimes will it take before I become a servant of my spiritual master? What to speak of? What to speak of? Being a servant in this world, no one goes to the university to get a PhD in being a servant. And actually, I saw one letter that recently that Prabhupada wrote. He was so enthusiastic, saying that the devotees should, they can, saying if we can get it in the university, some and devotees can be become PhDs and go to other universities all over the world and establish departments of Krishna consciousness. And the chairman of the Department of Krishna Consciousness, a PhD in that. And then we establish those departments, and then many students can come and join and have Krishna Consciousness as their major. He was very enthusiastic about this type of preaching. But what does it mean? A majoring and becoming a servant. This should be all our majors in our life. How to become a servant. How to please Krishna. So here is the translation of what Krishna revealed to the gopis, and the acharyas have spoken so much about this verse actually, because Krishna manifested himself fully in his beauty, because the hearts of the gopis was full. Wearing a peacock feather ornament upon his head, blue Kanikara flowers on his ears, a yellow garment as brilliant as gold, and the Vaijayanti garland, Lord Krishna exhibited his transcendental form as the greatest of dancers as he entered the forest of Vrindavan, beautifying it with the marks of his footprints. When Akura saw the footprints of Krishna marked in the dust, the soft dust of Braja, he went mad in ecstasy and began rolling on the ground, covering himself with the dust of Vrindavan. This is ecstasy. It wasn't artificial. This rasa, this ecstasy, this anubhav entered his heart. And he rolled, his body collapsed, and he rolled to get the dust of Krishna and cover his body with the dust of Krishna. Not artificial, but because he was a great devotee. So those footprints were decorating Vrindavan, and all the persons of Vrindavan, all the animals of Vrindavan would respect the footprints of Krishna and never, never smear them or walk over them. So that Krishna was entering Vrindavan, and as he was entering Vrindavan with the boys, with the cows pushed in front. Why were they pushed in front? Because Krishna was herding them. His responsibility was to care for them. And while doing that, he filled the holes of his flute with the nectar of his lips, and the cowherd boys sang his glories. They were just talking about Krishna. They would compose songs, poetry, metered poetry, very sweet about what Krishna had done every single day. And they would memorize it. And they would sing about Krishna. They would think about Krishna. It wasn't artificial. They loved Krishna. So they would speak and sing about the glories of Krishna as he entered the forest. And then, when they were returned from the forest, what a scene! Because they would enter the Vrindavan forest, and the gopas and the gopis would be crying, and the cows and the cowherd boys and the calves and all the creatures of the Vrindavan forest, from the trees to the birds to the bees, they would all be ecstatic. Krishna is entering the forest. Krishna is entering. We have the chance to see Krishna, the chance to serve Krishna. The grass, Krishna is going to touch us with his lotus feet, the dust of Vrindavan. Krishna is going to touch us. And then when Krishna leaves the forest of Vrindavan, then it goes opposite. It's the time for the residents of Vrindavan town to become, their life comes back to their body, they start rejoicing. And it's the time for the trees of Vrindavan to shed their leaves and cry. And the deer would walk to the edge of the forest with Krishna, with their sorrowful eyes. And they would stop at the edge of the forest of Vrindavan. They could not go any further. And the cowherd boys would still be happy because they were walking with Krishna. And they would be chanting his glories. Oh, Krishna, today Krishna has killed Agasura. And he has killed, and Balaram has killed Danukasura. And Krishna has done this. And we have played in this way. And Krishna has climbed. And he played his flute. And Krishna has wrestled. He has done this. And Krishna and Krishna and Krishna has done this and that and this and that. And the choicest poetry. And as they'd be returning to the town of Vrindavan, all the Brijbasis, their ears would be open for the sound of Krishna's flute. And they would be hearing everything that Krishna had done. And that, and they would take that poetry, those songs, and they would sing those songs all day long. And then the cowherd boys would have their time for crying, practically speaking, because they would enter their own houses. The calves and cows would be separated from Krishna. They would enter into the Goshala. And they'd be thinking, oh, this night is going to last forever, it seems. And the cowherd boys, as we heard earlier, were thinking, oh, it must be morning already. Because I want it to be morning. I must be morning already. Krishna, Kanaya, Kanaya, come, come. It's time to herd the cows. And Mother Yasoda, go home. It's still the middle of the night. Krishna's sleeping. Don't disturb him. Go home. Yes, Mai. Yes, Mother. And they would go home. And then a half hour later, they would come back. Kanaya, Krishna! Wake up! It's time! It's time! It's time! Come! Come! And everyone would be singing the glories of Krishna, all the activities that he had done during the day. So beautiful! In these very places, Krishna walked with the cows, with the cowherd boys. He would play, he would stay on the hill and he would play his flute. And the dust of Vrindavan was marked with his lotus footprints. Some places they're still there. So here is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, his comment on this verse. A short comment, actually, or I'll read a short part of it. Krishna was bedecked with a peacock feather and kanikara and a kanikara flower on his ears. Kanikara flower is singular, whereas kanayora, ears, is in the dual form. To indicate that sometimes Krishna wore one kanikara flower on the left ear and sometimes on the right ear, to express the intoxication of his youth. Because there is no one more intoxicated with himself than a 16-year-old. But of course, Krishna. Yeah, that's what we think. Why did Krishna is intoxicated with himself? The whole forest of Vrindavan is serving him. He can't do that. He's not allowed to be intoxicated with his beauty. He can't have all that. But no, he is the one who is. This is Krishna's position. The whole Vrindavan forest is serving him, not serving me. It is serving him. All the residents of Vrindavan, all the beautiful gopis, all the wonderful cowherd boys, all the best of mothers and the best of fathers and the best of friends, they're all serving Krishna. And if we don't like it, we have to stay in the material world. And we can imagine forever a Nadir Bahimuk. Atta eva maya tari samsareda duk. We can imagine, be an illusion, that I am the center. And because Jivera Swarup, my actual Swarup, is Krishna Nityadas. That's reality. I need an illusory identity, an illusory sense. I need to be in Maya. I need to be dreaming that I'm important, that I am the center of existence. I need this whole bubble, an imaginary universe in which I am the center. And that's called what everyone walks around with all day long in the material world, illusion, Maya. Just thinking what, you know, I want this. You've done this to me. You're not cooperating with my desire. You know, and I'm angry at you as if the universe is supposed to cooperate with me. But this is something we can all count on. The universe and all the people within it will not cooperate with us. It will not line ourselves up with my desires. Krishna is so kind, and I continually complain about this point. But Krishna is so kind that the universe is organized to be completely uncooperative. With me being the center, and it's supposed to satisfy me. It's so kindly organized in this way by Krishna. But this is what's maintaining the universe. And the people who, due to their karma, are powerful, who are able to control large parts of this world, these people are the most unhappy, miserable, frightened, paranoid people in this world, because they're always terrified. They become terrified of their best friends, that their friends are going to overthrow them if they're in government, their relatives, their servants. They can't trust anyone, because everyone is after their position. Because they're in their... Just imagine if the wealthiest person in this world on this particular day walked here right now, and if I asked who the wealthiest person, everyone in this room would say the same person probably, but I'm not going to ask you because I don't want to, at this particular place, to hear his name. But if he walked here right now, he had billions of dollars, we would all be very, very polite to him, welcome, we'd offer him this and that and that. But what would each and every one of us be thinking? How can I get some of his money? We'd all be thinking, how can I get his money? And he would know that we're all thinking that, so therefore he couldn't have any loving exchange with anyone, because he'd be afraid that we're all thinking of taking his money, and we'd be all trying to take his money. So therefore there is no love. And therefore there is such loneliness and fear from these people. Because the universe does not accept that anyone but Krishna is the center. And Krishna has no fear. Because he is Saraswarya Purna. He is unlimitedly powerful. He is unlimitedly beautiful. He's unlimitedly wealthy. He's unlimitedly knowledgeable. He's unlimitedly strong and unlimitedly renounced. So he is not full of anxiety. He is the center. He walks in Vrindavan intoxicated by his 16 years eternal body that's freshly blooming youth. Looking like the most exalted, beautiful 16-year-old. So he's expressing the intoxication of his youth. He wore a Vaidyantic garland made of flowers of five different colors. Thus Krishna's beautiful body, his body is eternally all beautiful, unlimitedly beautiful, looked like the best of dances, Natavaravapu. And the use of the word bibrat, he wore, indicates that Krishna purposefully dressed in an artful way to display his youthful charms in order to incite the romantic desires of the gopis, because they wanted to love him. There's some wonderful purports at the end of the 11th chapter of the first canto. Does anyone know the title of that chapter, the 11th chapter of the first canto? Krishna enters Dwarka. It's such a wonderful chapter, but these last purports by Srila Prabhupada are especially wonderful. Because Krishna walks into Dwarka and everyone, it's like life enters their bodies. And they hear his conch shell. First he blows his conch shell, and then they come back to life, and they all rush to the gates of the city to meet Krishna. And then they all greet Krishna as he's walking in. And then he sees his friends, he sees this one, he sees that one, all the people, and he charms them, he looks at them. And then he enters the homes of his parents. And then last, he enters the homes simultaneously, his 16,108 queens. And the queens are very shy, and they don't rush forward to embrace him. But first, they embrace him with their vision. They're seeing him. They take him in their hearts and embrace him in that way. And then, they send their sons forward to embrace him. And they are experiencing the sweetness of their love for Krishna. And Prabhupada explains in the purport and makes it so clear that Krishna is acting in this specific way as the perfect husband because his devotees want to, these devotees, these souls, these persons, they want to love him as their husband. And Krishna is fulfilling their desires. He's giving his devotees ecstasy. The devotees want nothing more than to please Krishna. And this all-powerful, all-beautiful person, this all-knowing person wants nothing other than to increase the ecstasy of his devotees. So therefore, atma-pajanta bhakta-vatsalya-vadanyata. He leans completely to his devotees. He yeyitam mam prapadyante. He's reciprocating with every living entity according to what they want. The angry persons, those who are angry, they see God as angry. We heard that. Those who are atheistical, Krishna perfectly reciprocates with them and gives them the consciousness where they don't see God anywhere. Because that's what they want to see. They don't want to see him. They want to disbelieve. He'll give them reasons. He'll give them science. They'll give them a mood. So they won't see him anywhere. And yet, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Valochanena, to those who love him, they see him everywhere. Prabhupada has called Prema Bhakti the magic wand of love. Magic wand because it changes everything. It changes what we see. and allows us to see Krishna everywhere. Premanjana charita bhakti valochanena. So Krishna is reciprocating with the queens by revealing himself as the perfect husband. And that is how the Supreme Lord gets his pleasure. To the coward boys, he becomes the most wonderful friend. The most wonderful, wonderful friends. He becomes the most charming son. He becomes the most glorious lover for the gopis. This is Krishna. And Giriraj Govardhan, what he wants to do is serve all those devotees. Serve Krishna. Give them facility for them to please Krishna. And Krishna not only wants to please them. So Giriraj is so special in that way. And therefore, if we pray to Giriraj very sincerely to offer some service to Krishna, therefore he will help us and give us that facility. Haridasa Varjo. Hante Anadri Adara Amara Haridasa Varjo. So the gopis, it's not that Krishna acts in a particular way to increase the ecstasy of the gopis. Krishna acts in a particular way to increase the ecstasy of the queens. Because they want to love him and serve him in that way. So, we'll end now and call for questions. But just first, look at this beautiful form of Krishna. I shouldn't have been unfair to... Oh, you can see him over there, the ones who are facing this way. So beautiful, Radha Shyama Sunda. And by hearing about Krishna's name, as Srila Jiva Goswami explained, then this form, and if we chant properly, this form will actually manifest. This is the promise of Srila Jiva Goswami. Will actually manifest. And as Prabhupada said, we should hear about the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna. Otherwise, we will not understand how to perform devotional service, or even what devotional service means. How pure it is, what it actually means. And therefore, how we have to change our hearts if we so desire to actually become servants of the servants of the servants of Krishna. You have all patiently listened. I'm sorry I didn't stop at all when I was supposed to stop. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Giriraj Maharaj ki jai, Jai Jai Sri Radhesha. Any questions or comments? Yes. Yes, please. Comments. Comments. Comments.
Jiva Goswami gives a comment on this verse, and he explains why Kana Yoga Kani Karam, why it's dual for the ears and singular for the flower. The Kani Kara flowers have a very unique characteristic. Even in Orissa, they say that they follow the sun. And so Krishna, it's said here he's wearing one Kani Kara flower, but he has two ears. And it indicates that he shifts that flower from one ear to the other. And another way is another more subtle meaning. When Krishna sees the gopis, he shifts that flower from one ear to the other so that that flower is always facing the gopis when Krishna is moving past them. To indicate that just like the Kani Kara flower is always following the sun, Krishna is indicating to the gopis that my mind is always following you.
Mm. And as the sun gives life to the flower, he's indicating something. Thank you very much.